Hello, can you hear me? All right, I think it's on. So a lot of you guys come in here, my perception going to a dev camp is that a lot of you guys were developers, but we've got a house full of in the design session. So how many of you consider yourself on the design side of that left brain, right brain spectrum, on the design side? All right, we've got a couple. How many devs? Or if it was split into thirds, who would be like in the middle, like designer and developer? All right, we've got a small group there. So I'm kind of in that middle third, if you will. Whenever I do an interview for my team, I always ask them where they are. So I actually went to design school, but fell in love with the code, and sometimes you'll find these computer science majors who fell in love with the I love both the left brain and the right brain work. So in this session, after we've already eaten, this is going to be the hard one because everyone's falling asleep a little bit. I won't call you out if you fall asleep. Just dead. We'll be talking about... So this is the one thing that sometimes people are like, why did you decide to go to Microsoft as a designer and bet your career on mobile? When I joined in like early 2009 and did my interviews in 2008, where Arturo showed those slides of kind of like the state of Windows Mobile at that point. And really the reason that I came to Microsoft was this, refinement. And it was the Zune HD that really sold me. I fell in love with that and the motion and the response that was in that project. Recently, I was working with Jeff, the motion designer, on something for the toolkit, and maybe this was a couple months ago. And we were working on some of the easing equations, and I had it marked up in Blend, and we were showing it to him. And he looks at it on a device, and he says, that motion's a little slow. And I was like, oh, I copied it from the other code, so it's probably right, but I'll take a look. And I take a look at it, and the motion was slow by 0.017 of a second. And he was right. But I'm proud to work on a team at Microsoft that's all about refinement. They come up with a great idea, or they work with people who have great ideas, but then they take that pixel, or that 0.017 of a second, and make it just awesome. So that's what we'll be focusing on in this session. To give some background, we'll be talking about context, best practices for refinement. There's some things that we're going to do in this session and even in the build session that comes up next that you can do really quickly and take your app to the next level. So it doesn't have to be super painful. You don't have to give up your firstborn child to have a good app. So many phone applications, as well as many ideas that come out of the design studio, are not that well designed. However, the three things that Arturo showed in his slide deck early on is if you can nail these three things, at least figure out how your app answers these three sort of questions, you'll be doing pretty well. Useful thing, we can't help you with, right? Like, you have to come up with an app idea by yourself. I'm not going to stand up here and give you useful ideas for apps. And then also, oh, this is Karina Black, by the way. She did this slide deck. So if the presentation goes well, you can say my presentation skills did that. But if it goes poorly, you can blame Karina's slide deck. How about that? It's a little fair trade. But no, I think this is her slide about what isn't useful. A car without tires. It's a very visual slide. And then also something that's usable, and in this slide deck I'm talking about performance and response and motion, or just app doesn't crash, right? That's just your development skills. And we can help with that. The dev track is helping with that. But the thing that we're going to focus on, the visuals are really good. I don't even need to talk to this. Like, that's a really poorly designed tea kettle. It's a great slide. And then the thing that we should be able to help you with, and hopefully in this session, in the next section after our sessions where we're just kind of talking you through some of your ideas and applications, as well as tomorrow when we're going to be here just helping people who have questions about creating their own applications, is the desirable factor. So that's my house. It's not desirable. That's not really my house, but it's a picture of something that's not desirable. So this is a review that I just read recently from Gizmodo, but the truth is most technology isn't pleasant. The new Windows Phone is, very much so. It feels alive, everything bounces, everything swoops, everything flips. Every single action is lushly animated. It doesn't just sweat the details. Blood was spilt. And he doesn't really go into definition about the exact details, but I like to think that 0.017 of a second is the thing that won him over, right? The fact that, you know, he does actually say that there was, oh, blood was spilt, and that was like Arturo's and my blood over the last 3 years. So I'm a little proud of that fact. But just that time we spent polishing those little details paid off in the fact that when he wrote this review, he liked it. And this is sort of the thing that Arturo was talking about last session. When you create something, you should be thinking about ahead what those reviews are going to say. Like if you're working on a golf application, you should be thinking about how someone's going to write a review and say, this golf application helped me, blah, blah, blah. And this guy, when I was working on that piece, I wanted him to write that. And so I had to throw it up there because it's one of the best reviews that I've read. So best practices, I think we're going to go through 9 or 10 of these best practices. And I'm going to be switching back from between code and then a PowerPoint. So forgive me if there's like any lag in between the two. But the first of these is typography. And all of these best practices we've already talked about today. However, I'm going to show you in Blend. How many of you guys have actually used Blend? Ah, that's a fair amount. Visual Studio? That's a fair amount. So Blend, I've been using Blend since probably like 2006, and I love Blend now, so you'll get that. Skip them to the wrong side. So embrace typography, use font, weight, and size to convey hierarchy. Right now, I'm going to flip over to Blend, and I have got this little demo application. And it's all right. Some developers might call it quits here. Some might actually say it's good to go. But if I hit F5 and Blend, by the way, the second session that I have, the one right after this, will be going into detail in Blend. So in this time, it might be a little bit more smoke and mirrors, like showing you some really cool little things that we can do in Blend. And then the second time, I'll go through step by step and say, like, if you're in Blend or Visual Studio and you want to implement transitions, this is how you do it. This one will be a little bit faster. So here we've got a simple little application. Flip through it. Click on some things, they go straight there, click back, click back twice. But as you can see, the typography doesn't really jump out at you like crazy. It's pretty consistent around here. If there were a couple different warnings, I might just think, which one's for me, I'm not quite sure. So I wouldn't read through all of these or scroll down to read through all of these. And then the response and like going into different pages, it even fires off the motion twice. So we're going to fix all of those issues. The very first thing that I'm going to show you about Blend is that it's very easy to implement the styles, sort of the repeating styles or these data templates that are implemented in these lists. So the first thing that I'm going to do is look, oh, I have a panorama control. By the way, how many of you have actually seen a panorama control in action? We've heard it talked about. Who hasn't seen it in action? So we've talked about it. It is the main way if you want to get a big overview of your application, right? Like a pivot is like pivoting on different data, that like this giant overview. So here is the panorama control. Notice how the header scrolls along the top. One of the things that I could do here, just to show you, if I come back to the application, I select my panorama. I could even drag and drop an image in. How do I do that? Let's go here to my pictures. Grab an image, drag and drop it into Blend. I have to build first so that it knows that picture's in. But as soon as I do that, I can change that background image. Did I hit F5? Sorry. Anyway, I would be able to swap out this background image right here. Images. Actually, let's do something else, one that I know that is already in there. So I think my grid is already in there. So this is going to be a little ugly, not one that a designer would be proud of, but just parallax effect, how the text moves faster than the background. go. So notice that image in the background. You see it slowly moving along behind there. Then everything loops when you get to the end, including the header text. So those are some of the rules. Right now, that's a short image, so you barely see it kind of moving side to side. If it was the right length, it would move a little bit faster. You can adjust that by adjusting the width of your image. I'm going to turn that off. Let's see here, background equals none for now. All right, so that was just a side note because you guys, we had mentioned it, but nobody had actually shown it to you guys. All right, on my panorama, I have inside of it three different panorama items. One is sort of this overview weather. One is this alerts, and one is kind of these image screenshots from locations. So of the location of where you're grabbing your weather data. If I were in Visual Studio, the preview for this would be really, really rough. So you need to make your edit and then run the project, go back, make your edit, and run the project. The cool thing about Blend is you don't have to do any of that. You can do it all in Blend. As a matter of fact, over here, if you go to Devices, you can switch between light theme and dark theme. You can even change your accent color. So I'm going to change my accent color to orange. It takes a second to preview, but it allows for a very visual way of creating your application. So now if I go over to my alerts, you'll notice that it pulled in my accent brush. All right, back to this guy. In here, I have a list of data. I'm going to do this really quickly. We'll go through it again next time. But I'm basically going to edit the additional templates, the generated items template, which is basically all the different items that appear, and apply a resource that I created way before this session. And it kind of spruces it up. If I go to this next one, alerts, same thing. I'm going to go to edit additional templates, the item template that's generated from the data, and do alerts, item template. It starts to lay things out a little bit better. Now, one of the things that I did is rechange the size inside of that template manually in the next session. But one thing that I need to do is make this into a wrap panel so that I'm sort of laying out these items next to each other so that you see more alerts than one. So if I go to my my alerts list and go edit additional templates, there's also an items panel that you can change. And I'm going to change it to one I've pre-created. Hit F5. Ready, just with those simple little changes that me working with a designer, if I was a developer, or the other way around, would just sort of happen as they worked on the project. It doesn't take too long to run, but it feels longer when you're presenting. Side note. So just those little updates. You're starting to see the app come together just a little bit prettier. All right, let's go back to my PowerPoint. Does anybody have any questions about that? I know, it was a little bit presentation smoke and mirrors. The next thing that we're going to talk about is the grid system. So Arturo did a good job of talking about the grid system already. Ours just happens to be the 2412, 2412, 2412. So one of the things that Arturo gave you resources for is a graphic for the grid. So you can pop this over your application. I've already done this as a cheat in my Blend application. So I have it collapsed here so you can't see it. If I run this project, I don't even need to run it because I'm in the Visual Blend Editor. But I'll come over here and it's not quite aligned to the grid. So my next slide, I'm actually going to jump to it really quickly. Shift F5. Is a little research study that happened, and you guys saw my notes about it. You probably read them already. But basically, they did this research study at this college, and they displaced one button on the grid. And basically, it slowed down the time for somebody to figure it out and then use the exact same thing. I think this one's a little bit different with the numbers in verse. But just by displacing one number from a perfect grid, it threw off their ability to use that grid by a significant amount. And I think this is a great example of showing like using this grid and making sometimes a complex task seem simple to the human mind can go a long way with your application. So if I come back here to Blend and I go to my first alerts thing, I have another template that I made ahead of time, smoke and mirrors. I'm going to apply a new template and align it to the grid a little bit better. Now I'm going to go to my first leather. Edit this template too. And it basically just does some, but if I save this and hit F5, when we run the project, you'll be able to see that even with the motion, things just start just with these little tweaks. I think we changed the font sizes up until now, and then the next thing we did was just align it to a grid. See how the titles line up, the images line up to the grid. It's starting to feel a little bit more like a polished application. And I realize these are very subtle things and subliminal things, but it might be the one thing that when somebody reviews your application says, man, it just felt so much more polished than the other Solitaire app that somebody else is trying to sell. All right, back to the PowerPoint. Yep. So by default, things do snap in Blend. However, they mostly snap to other objects in the way that they align. The way that I like to tweak to the grid is usually fairly manual process. Resizing my fonts, making sure they're the right size, laying out all that stuff. However, I very rarely do it in Blend in that level of designing. When I'm actually doing the first concept stuff, usually I create that grid and begin laying out those basic elements at that point. By the time I get to Blend, it's just matching what my original design intent. Very rarely do I design this late in the cycle. But either way, it's fairly random. Manual, not random. Sorry. All right. Does that answer your question? Any other questions about designing with a grid? Oh, I should probably, when I go back to Blend, turn off that grid. All right, so using animations, transitions, and effects to guide and delight. We talked a lot about this. The Core OS on Windows Phone, if you've gotten to play with it, pretty much every single page that I missed in Office because it got cut, has great transitions from one to the next. There are rules around those transitions, like Arturo talked about. And so what we're going to do is go implement some of the toolkit transitions. So is everyone familiar with the way the toolkit works? So the toolkit is a little bit separate. You have to download the toolkit, which I already did before. And unfortunately, it doesn't come packaged with everything. So you basically have to go online, get the Windows Phone toolkit, and then add the DLLs to your project, which I did ahead of time, thankfully. If I was going to do that on stage, this would be a very boring presentation. All right. So one of the other things that's interesting about the toolkit, there isn't a great answer for it in Blend. However, Blend works really nicely with Visual Studio. We give you two tools, right? We give you Visual Studio and Blend. And one of the things that's nice about it, not only can you work in these two separately, but if you like right-click on this project, you can just say Edit in Visual Studio, and you can flip between the two programs. It'll open Studio. No? Can you hear me? Yep. And now, after 1 second, you'll be able to edit the project in Visual Studio as well. There it is. So the same thing, but basically without all the visuals attached. So the first thing that I'm going to go do is add page transition animations. After I do that, I'm going to add tilt animations to like the tiles and the like that. So first off, the very first thing that you need to do when you implement your toolkit is one, download the toolkit, two, add the DLLs to your project and resources. So if I go or to my references, so Microsoft.phone.toolkit, you see it there. And so now, oh, and then the third thing, sorry, I should have said this, is you need to turn your root element on your whole project into a transition element where by default it is not. So in my app.xaml, and this is all online so you can grab sort of the source code and how we did this, I'm going to do this a little bit of a manual process. but come down here, and my root frame right now is a phone application frame. I'm going to comment that out and turn it into a transition frame. That'll go a long way for us. Now if I come back to the main page, in order to not have to type some code in front of you guys, I'm going to drag and drop a couple of snippets. So if you want to look at this, we've got a transition service.navigation transition, and then we have a navigation transition.backward. And then we can define whether that's a turnstile, whether it's a slide. We can kind of define each of the different pieces on this. I'm also going to do this on my alerts page. Go to my pages. I'm not a very big fan of the visual editor in Visual Studio, so I always collapse it. And then I'm going to grab my transition alerts. Now, one of these things you'll notice in Blend, in Visual Studio, there's these little blue squiggly lines that says, I don't know what that means. So I have another snippet that just says, make sure that you add a reference to the toolkit, and that fixes that. So you got to make sure that you have the references to that toolkit. I will do it on the image details as well. This will be the last one that I do it. By the way, it's probably a fairly good practice to save these as snippets anyway. It would be a pain to write these every time. But if you have a consistent like sliding page, which is all, like as Arturo pointed out, the last page in any navigation, if it doesn't navigate anywhere else, it's like kind of like a modal window or a picker. It usually does the slide animation. You might want to keep that one as a snippet. So there we go. Alerts. Oops. Image. And once again, I need to save toolkit reference. Now hit F5, and after I do all that, that one more piece of polish is going to make sure that all these pages transition nicely in between each other. The thing that I'm going to do directly after this is apply tilt. It comes within the toolkit DLL, and it's something that you see whenever you press as a response. Response, by the way, is very... Say it takes the next page of your 1 second to load. If you press the tilt, and that takes 0.2 of a second, or 0.3 of a second, actually, for that animation to tilt and then pop back up, and then it takes 0.2 seconds of dark where there's nothing happening, and then 0.4 seconds of that next screen swiveling in, you just took up that whole second. So what would have been click 1001 of black is now click... There's no better way to put it than with sound effects. And it seems much, much more responsive at that point. So here we go. Oh, it's open. So now, if I click on this, it's something that we'll take care of. By the way, you've never worked with a good motion designer if you've never heard the sound effects. When you're working with Jeff, I'm like, which motion applies on this page? And he's like, you know, the whoosh. And you're like, oh, that one, yeah. Because every motion has a little bit of a personality and a sound effect. All right, so I'm going to go back to my main page. And I already have the toolkit DLL in, and I want to apply tilt. So the only thing that I need to do is go down to whatever item that I want to apply the tilt on, which is the image grid. Sure, let's put it there. Oop, I have to stop running the project, or else I can't type. And you have to type in toolkit. There is a tilt effect. Is tilt enabled equals true. That's all there is to it. I'm going to go apply this one other place, which is on the alerts grid. Actually, technically, I'm putting it on the alerts list box where all the items come in. And it will filter on down. So now I'm running the project, building it here. There we go. So we've got those motions coming in. Everything's aligning nicely to the grid. And now, did you see how that tilted? When I click and drag over it, it kind of tilts all the way around. One other thing about kind of the importance of that response. I was riding on a plane on the way over here, and they had the TV screens in the back of our seats, and there was not good response on these TV screens. So you would tap a menu item, and you would hope to get a television show, but because it didn't respond in any way, you would think that it hadn't felt your touch. And so the kid sitting directly behind me was hammering the button, trying to make sure the next page, which it was just taking a little time. And so thus the ride was a little bit like that. So it's very important to have response in your UI. All right. And it drives home the point, because I'm sitting there thinking, man, that designer. All right, shift F5. Okay. I had already skipped to the next slide. So the last one was using animations, transitions, and effects to guide and delight. Does anyone have any questions about animations? Transitions, the ones that you want to use on your page. By the way, the one that you saw in the motion like this, turnstile feather, that one's not in the toolkit because it needs to be applied manually to the list items. I've written one. I'm going to put it on my blog. I keep forgetting to, because my blog's down, but it'll be up in like a week. I've been busy. Then design with themes in mind and use theme resources to respond to theme settings. This is a really important one. In general, you want your application to respect the person's theme settings, right? I love orange or whatever, so I set my theme color to orange, and I prefer the light theme, so I set my theme to light. Usually you want to respect those. There are definitely things when you have applications that you might want to hard code all your colors. If you are doing a card game and you want the theme of that card game to be dark, like you're playing in an actual casino, then you might want to do something like that. If there's an actual visual design requirement for it, then go for it. Otherwise, just respect the theme. So we're going to go back to Blend really quickly. And as I showed you earlier, actually, I forgot to turn off that grid, so let's do that right now. Collapse it. One of the things I love about Blend is that there's like three choices for anything. If I wanted to rename this layer, I could double-click it here and rename it. Or if I was a developer, I could write it right here into the code. Or if I'm the kind of guy who's in Photoshop all the time, I could just name it up there. So it's kind of to each his own. It's kind of the multi-purpose design developer tool. That's a side note. What were we talking about again? Oh, yeah, themes. So I'm going to go back to device and go to the light theme. And right now, my theme color is orange. And you're going to notice that if I zoom out, my title disappeared. A whole bunch of things went wrong on this page. So first off, I've got some color resources. And if you switch to your resources pane, you'll see there's all these different resources laid out in a nice little panel. And this guy by default is hard-coded. So my foreground color is hard-coded. I'm going to just link it to an actual color resource. So this is custom foreground color. I'm going to just set it to the that hovers phone foreground color. Right there. Oh, there my title is back. I'm going to set my custom background color to equal a color resource. These are the ones that are provided by default, by the way. I'm just linking it to the ones that are provided by default phone background color. And then the last thing, my custom accent color, I'm going to link this to the color resources, the phone accent color. So now I'm going to save all this. When I run my project, I should be able to see in certain places that I've defined coming through. And because those themes are used for actions like buttons and text, you may want to use that because people are looking for orange things in order to be a hit target. My theme is red on the phone. Oh, by the way, in the emulator, if you click here and go to the home screen, you have settings here. I don't know if you guys knew this, but you can actually change this. So let's go to light, and then we'll change the red to a teal. Go back home, click on Weather Watch. Now the teal and the light theme are observed. So it's a simple way to put your application, make it feel part of the core OS, along with the live tiles and things like that. If it looks like it shipped with the phone, it might do really well in the marketplace. You're like, oh, this is the default card game. All right. So the next thing, leverage the full power of the well, I would say all the controls, but the panorama and the pivot controls. So these ones by default, this one, this application does a really good job of using the different panorama and the pivot controls. However, the panorama and the pivot controls, people also, with great power comes great responsibility, right? A lot of times you'll see them used poorly. For example, pivot, it's a great way to pivot on data, you know, like unread email, read email, I'm just flipping through it. Panorama, it's like a big overview. So a couple of things to note about using these applications or these controls, and I'll walk you through it in detail. So the panorama, this is the panorama. You wouldn't want to use it with really more than like 5 panes. So it becomes big. It's supposed to like show you the entire state of the UI. None of it's virtualized, so there's kind of a usability need there too. So if you're developing this and you have a giant background image and a lot of data pouring into this, it might begin to become unperformant after a while. So if you have a giant panorama with too many things, it's always loaded in the whole time into all your memory. The pivot, on the other hand, is virtualized. So the pivot that you're currently on, the pivot before, and the pivot after are all loaded up into data, so it feels fast and snappy when you're flipping through it. However, if you've got 5 items in there, the 2 on the outside are not going to be loaded up. So they're basically gone in the memory, which makes it really performant and snappy. Utilize auto size elements when supporting multiple orientation. Arturo talked a little bit about this. There's a lot of different ways that you can do it. By default on our phone, everything spins and flips into rotation. When in the Core OS, you have to build that manually. So we don't provide that control out of the box just yet. There's some talk about how it's going to come down, but it's a little bit of a pain point. I'm honest about those. Does anyone have any questions right now as to these features, like supporting multiple orientation? One good use of it on the phone currently is the calculator app. This ships with the phone. If you hold the phone vertically, like in portrait mode, you get just the basic default simple calculator. If you turn it sideways, you get much more advanced calculator and a much different dialer. So you have maybe 20 more buttons that you had in the portrait one, and I think it's a great use of the application. However, you also have to run the risk of potentially not people not knowing that that exists, right? So you don't want to do that. One of the things that I'll show you in my application, the panorama is always supposed to be in portrait by default. So if you create that page, there's an easy way to do it here. I'm just going to hit escape and go back to Blend to show you. If I select my phone application page and go to my properties over here, there is supported orientation. By default, I had that set to portrait because it is a panorama. However, you can do landscape by default or portrait and landscape by default. So, yeah, portrait and landscape will support either. Landscape will only support landscape. Portrait will only support portrait. It's pretty self-explanatory on that one. So for using the back stack navigation, this is an interesting one. You have control of the back button. You do not have control in your application of the home button at all. So the home button will always go back to the home page or the start menu. If you click the back button, you can modify the history stack. You can actually capture the event of the back button being pressed and do something else. Sometimes you can force them into your little home start menu. However, if you're using like pin tiles or pin locations to your application and you pin that on a page and it goes directly into there and then you fire the back button and it forces them, instead of going back to your home page that you came from, back into some home on your application, it might be very confusing for the user. So remember, back means back, not forward, not sideways, but back. So even in my application that I did myself that I was working on, I got into a dilemma with the back stack, and it's an easy thing to do as soon as you start messing with it a little bit. So Arturo talked about this slide a little bit. It's the hub and spoke model. I won't go into it in too much detail. However, I will give this analogy. If you're on the start menu and you click on people and you go into the people and you sort of pan over to what's new, and then you notice that somebody's made a comment that you want to comment on, you click on it, and then if you hit the back button, you expect to go back to the people hub, and the back button again, you expect to go back to start. That's pretty traditional. However, if there's some people and you decide to, in the people hub, pin this person to your start menu, it will jump you out to the start menu and you've got this person pinned here. You click on the profile, pan over to history, and then type on Karina to text her or whatever that you've done in the history. If you would hit phone, it would call her. So when I go back, it would go back to history, but because it just sort of jumped us, it would jump back to the start menu and then back to people from where we pinned it. So it's kind of that history through, instead of using like in other OSs where you'd have to hit home and then go back up into that application you were, it's a quick way to multitask without actually having to use the multitasking. There are some times, and this is not super, super rare, one, you would not want the back stack on any sort of modal window or start window or even load screen. But here's another example where you wouldn't want to use it. Say somebody comes into your app, they've got a wish list, and then they need to buy something. So they click credit card, they fill all that stuff out, they're finished, ta-da. When they hit back, they want to just go back to their wish list for a couple of reasons. One, you don't need them to go back to their credit card screens just to get back to the wish list. But two, you may not want them to actually submit the credit card page again. There might be some technical difficulties there. If you guys were ever web developers in the 90s, yeah, you know the pain that I'm talking about. This next slide is very graphical. Very important. Oh, wait, no, sorry. This is the one about search. So if you go to wish list, search, get some results, hit results, and hit the back stack, go all the way back to the wish list, this may or may not want to be an action that you define for your user. They may find some frustration around that. So ensure transient interface elements do not appear in the back stack. So we have a dilemma in our application. If I hit escape and go back to my Blend application, every time I click into something and go back, it plays that intro animation again. The reason is that I just have a animation on the main page and it fires off every single time I come in. The good thing is it's not a separate page, so I don't have to remove it from the back stack, which is a fairly easy task to do. But it is this pop-up overlaid down here at the bottom. It's this grid. So all I need to do is, one, create a pop-up around this. And I'm going to name this pop-up. Wrong button. I'm going to call it pup. And then I'm going to say is open equals true. I'm going to wrap this whole thing. This is one of a lot of different ways that you could do this. It's a good one, though. Man, how complex is that load screen? This is the most complex thing in this app. All right. So now we've got pup all wrapped around this. So there's in the code, if we flipped over here to our Visual Studio, yes, reload it because I've done a bunch of editing, I could go in my mainpage.xaml, which is my visual, which is my design file, right directly behind that is always my code file, so mainpage.xaml.cs. I could come in here and I have a opening animation completed event. So all I would need to do on this guy is say pup.isCloses equals false. So first time it plays this animation, after it's done, it closes it out. Another thing that you can do in an animation, you can literally fire off any property on anything. Animation, right? Because it's in pup, so I could just animate the property of is opened. But I'll do it this way in code. If you guys want me to see me do it the other way, then, oops, it's running right now. I've got to stop it. Pup.isOpen equals false. Run the project. And now the animation completes. Like I had said, it's going to close that pop-up that surrounds the animation. When we press the back button, we won't see it over and over and over again. Ah, beautiful. That transition actually looks pretty good. I'd ship that. All right. All right, so we got rid of the transient UI that loads up the screen. So if you want to have, so your graphic is just an image. But if you want it to appear animated, the trick is always throw up an image and then have an animation that matches that directly. So you have your logo, and you want it to, once the application finishes loading, spin closed. All you have to do is have a graphic. One of the things that we could do really quickly, actually, is take a screenshot of our application, like this weather watch right here, and then save that out as a JPEG, and then replace, if I go here to my project, there are three graphics that are in every single application. There is background, and this is the loading. There is splash screen, which is the, sorry, this is the loading, and then application icon, which is the little guy, and then background, which is the tile image. So there's always the little icon that shows up in the app list. This guy right there. There is the big graphic that Arturo pointed out is like the transparent PNG. So let's pin this guy to start. This guy. And then there's always this image when you load in. That is actually a graphic. And now it's the XAML. And now it's animated. So it's a nice little trick. All right. Ensure application state is persisted appropriately. So this is an interesting one. I'll talk in more detail about this in the next session. But a good example of this in our application is when you go to make a comment. So I'm going to go here, and I click on this, and I actually have a little link down here to make a comment on this text. If I start typing, and I've thought long and hard about what I'm going to say in this, and then I hit the back button, go out, come back, it's gone. And that might be a frustration. So you might want to persist that over page to page. So I've actually written a quick snippet about that. So if you come here to your pages, and then you go to your comment details code, I've written a nice little snippet that allows this. It's basically on the navigated to event, I'm going to override it. And basically, in isolated storage, I am going to pull up if this text stream exists. On navigated from, I'm going to create this text and serialize it, save it. So here we go. You might want to do this at a more global level than doing it on every single file. Quick way to do this. Any questions about that? Is everyone familiar with isolated storage yet? Most people? So isolated storage is basically like a little piece of the hard drive that you get that you could save anything into, like text files and such. But I'm going to come over here and make a comment on an image. Oh, this is pretty. Go back again. Now when I come back, it loaded that out, and it now you can see it back in the same place. Yes. If we left the application totally, you might want to clear isolated storage, which is really easy to do. But if you wanted to right now, so here I am leaving it. If I did it right now, because it's saved in isolated storage, it should be there when I get back. But it's a very easy thing to do. That's one of the things. So notice how in my snippet of code, I'm actually just writing in the root directory to a file called text.txt. This is a really, really simple, dumb way to do it. However, if I was saving all my text boxes, I might want to make a folder called like text boxes or a file or some a better system than this and save it all in there. On exiting the application, I may want to clear out that whole thing. You wouldn't want to reload this if you went to make a comment on another page and it still had that same comment in there because you had exited out. So there's some dilemmas with the way I'm doing it. I just wanted to show you how easy it is to really persist that data from screen to screen or pass that information around. Good question. All right. Here's their example, basically the same thing. So this is sort of how we tombstone in Mango on Windows Phone. There is the tombstoned application. There is an activated application. And then as soon as it's activated, it begins running. After that, if you leave or exit this, it's deactivated and it becomes dormant. It's basically in the back stack at that point. You can use it. And you can go straight from dormant into activated like that. However, it may potentially get tombstoned or basically taken offline where nothing's happening, nothing's going on with it. And there's some simple snippets to get around this or to use this. And one that I use just very briefly that can do a ton, just this one little snippet of code will take an application from kind of frustrating of losing your state to really pretty far, is on the application activated, do e.isApplicationInstancePreserved. And at that point, you can find out whether or not you need to look all the way back into isolated storage or whether your sort of saved states are already still there. It hasn't lost anything. So this one would be do not restore the state. Otherwise, you need to pull out a lot of data. But if you do that every time, it might be unnecessary. So leveraging the full power of live tiles. This is really easy to do. We make it super easy, and it's super powerful and kind of cool. So I'm going to come to my main page, .xaml.cs. And once again, I'm in Visual Studio instead of Blend because it's a little bit more code intensive. But all I'm going to do is there's an update tile. And this is just a little function that is passing some text into the tile. And then when I get my weather data, when it all comes down, I need to call that update tile call. So. And since I pinned already, I pinned our application to the start. It's not very complex. When I go over to this, should be running. Ah, there it goes. Now it's got the updated version. So now I actually had real data pull in into my feed. And now if I go back to the start screen, give it a second, watch this. Watch it. Yes. Pulled it in. Weather is cloudy and 30 degrees Fahrenheit in Seattle right now. Probably about the exact same as here. Probably pretty similar. All right. Any questions about that? Yes. Yes, that's correct. If the tile's never been started. Yeah. Or if the application has never been started. Next question. Oh, it's the same question. Yes.
But how would the packet update you with the app you're getting into? Say some sort of just using data, something like that?
Yes.
Should increase or
down? Yeah, so you can use a thread in the background. Updating without this. This is just one way of updating the live tile, and it's the most rudimentary way. That right now, the way that I'm updating that tile is literally when that code gets fired in the application when the application is running. However, you can do that in its deactivated state.
Okay, so you should format thread in the application in that output?
Yes, yes. I guess I should go full screen again. And that is it for this session. Where are we at with time? Oh, perfect. We're supposed to end at 2:40. We're 6 minutes early. If you have any questions, let me know. Other than that, we're going to take like a 10-minute break and come back for probably another 40 minutes on the build session.